Body Talk, sponsored by Spire Hartswood Hospital in Brentwood, providing private healthcare for all the family.
Now, tonight's guest on Body Talk is Mr. Mourin Al-Saharay, who is one of the consultant general surgeons at Spire Hartswood Hospital in Brentwood. As well as specialising in general keyhole surgery and thyroid gland surgery, he has a particular interest in bowel surgery. And he'll be talking to us tonight about hemorrhoids, otherwise known as piles, and some of the latest treatments that are available to help sufferers. Mourin Al, good evening to you.
Good evening to you, Jess.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, and thanks for inviting me to your show.
Well, you're very welcome indeed. Now, it's one of these embarrassing bodies type shows tonight, isn't it? But before we get on to that, let's talk about your background. Can you tell me a little bit about your background as a doctor and as a surgeon, and especially what brought you to Essex?
Well, Jules, I was brought up in India, and I sort of come from a town which has been made famous by Mother Teresa. I come from Calcutta.
Ah, okay.
And I went to the medical school in Calcutta, which was set up by the British Raj. It's the oldest in Asia, over 150 years old.
Wow.
I qualified at the age of 21, and after a few years, just came to England to broaden my horizons. And my first job, first post in this country, was in Bishop Stortford, in a small, very friendly hospital.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I went to Sheffield for 2 years.
And then, I know Sheffield. I studied there.
Oh, right. Okay. And I have fond memories of that place. Mm-hmm. And after that, from Sheffield, I came back to London to do my postgraduate training in and around the teaching hospitals of London.
Mm-hmm.
I trained at UCL, where I did a PhD in surgery from University of London, and also trained at Barts and the London, and in the hospitals in and around sort of London and Essex.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I was appointed a consultant at Old Church, which is now Queen's. And that was over 11 years ago. And I've been in England now nearly 25 years.
And you settled. So you are a local boy then, definitely. So what led you to specialise in keyhole surgery and bowel problems in particular?
Well, in the 90s when I was training, that was the first time that keyhole surgery came into being in general surgery in England. And it started with gallbladder surgery. And of course, as a young trainee, it was very attractive because the advantages of it, quick recovery and minimal trauma, was something that we became aware of very, very quickly.
Sure.
But also we became aware that you have got to be trained right in the procedure because, of course, when complications and things do happen, and they can happen if you're not trained right, then they are sometimes catastrophic.
Mm.
So that was what led me into laparoscopic surgery, and after that into bowel surgery especially because it's one of the largest organs in our body. There are a variety of problems that can happen. It's immensely complex and it's a challenge.
Mm.
And gradually, and in this day and age of super specialization, it so happened that I found my niche in what we call colorectal surgery, that is surgery of the lower end of the bowel, more specifically bowel cancers, and also other conditions which are like hemorrhoids, which are a huge problem, but of course it's not sinister, but a nuisance.
I suppose, I mean, it's never nice being ill with anything, but I suppose the area that you specialise in, it's one of those areas that can cause such discomfort and such embarrassment and such pain that it must be very rewarding when you see it done properly and people getting better.
Yes, it's very rewarding, especially when people have the courage to come up and seek help, because often people would ignore their symptoms for quite a long time.
Sure.
Because they're embarrassed to tell others. Although you would talk about your wart or something on your hand, you really wouldn't, it wouldn't be the topic of discussion.
Sure.
About rectal problems and especially some embarrassing bleeding that you might have had.
Sure. I mean, we'll talk more about that a little bit later on, about, you know, how difficult it is to get people to come and see you and how that affects, you know, how well they can get as a consequence. Tonight, obviously, we've chosen to cover the very common and painful condition of hemorrhoids, as you mentioned. Now, it's one of those embarrassing bodies type complaints that people don't necessarily talk about. But obviously, as we said, it can be very distressing. Can you just start off by explaining exactly what that condition is?
Okay, hemorrhoids, as it is literally sort of translated, it's a Greek word sort of meaning flow of blood, flowing blood. And what it is that around our back passage or around our bottom, we have two sort of separate sets of blood vessels or pads, as they're called, which is there for a purpose. What it is that by increasing or decreasing the blood flow in those areas, we can finally open and close the back passage. And that is important because the rectum can differentiate between liquid feces, gas, and sometimes we have to finally open and close the back passage. That is why they're there.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens due to various reasons, and one of them commonly which we are aware of, that is constipation, it is possible that we strain more and more. There are other causes, of course, because some people are... we see it in families, so hereditary factors must be a reason, as well as a pregnancy in pregnant women when the uterus presses on various veins. What happens is these blood vessels, which are there, they just become more prominent and congested. And in doing so, they sort of can bleed when you pass a motion. And not only that, they give rise to other troublesome symptoms as well. That is, the lining of these blood vessels is stretched and they produce more mucousy substance. So the bottom will feel a bit wet. It irritates that skin. So there is a lot of itching.
Mm.
And occasionally it's uncomfortable because they are swollen.
Mm.
Depending on the degree of the problem that you have, because it initially starts as a slight swelling of the top of the top level of blood vessels, but gradually it progresses more and more. And then what happens is that sometimes you bleed, sometimes while opening your bowels, something seems to come out. And initially, in the early stages, it then goes back on its own. But a time comes when they don't, they prolapse and they don't go back on their own, those blood
right.
vessels. And then you have to push them back. And gradually, it gets worse and worse. And at the very late stages, it will come out and it wouldn't go in. And then the muscles around the back passage makes compress them more and they become swollen and they're painful and they're irritating and you can't sit down and they bleed and they produce a lot of nuisance and pain.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's a very, very good summary of what hemorrhoids are. I'm just interested, as you said that, I didn't realise that there were hereditary factors in this as well. Obviously, we all know about straining and being constipated and the fact that pregnant women during childbirth as well, obviously, when they're pushing down, very often as a consequence of that, they get piles. So you're at more risk if you've got a parent, presumably, who suffers from it.
Yes, and we have seen that it does run in families. And often people will say, oh, yes, my parents or someone else that I knew in the family had hemorrhoids. It's often a good thing because then we know that it may not be that it runs in families and it's not serious. But sometimes it's not so good to have a family history because people can then not take these symptoms seriously. Because
right.
although bleeding is one of the symptoms from hemorrhoids, and it's the bleeding, sort of the commonest cause of bleeding is hemorrhoids, and it's usually fresh, bright red blood. But it can be, bleeding can be due to other very sinister causes, and certainly it's something that should not be ignored, especially in someone over 45.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, sometimes it's any bleeding, especially in a person over 45, should be taken seriously, and at least one should consult their GP, who would have the training to ask the relevant questions, because sometimes not only bleeding, there's a slight change of bowel habit or other relevant factors that would then draw attention that it may not be hemorrhoids, although hemorrhoids might be a manifestation of that is there. There can be other reasons why the bleeding is happening, and certainly one shouldn't ignore any bleeding.
So you're talking there about things like bowel cancer, presumably?
Yes.
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. Right, this is absolutely fascinating. A little bit more after some more music.
Body Talk, sponsored by Spire Hartswood Hospital in Brentwood, your local private hospital.
You're listening to Body Talk on Phoenix FM with me, Jules Batazzi. I'm here tonight with Mr. Marina Sahare. We are talking about hemorrhoids. We are having an embarrassing bodies night tonight. Marina, we were talking just before that music about the causes of hemorrhoids, and we've touched on various different factors. I'm interested in knowing who is most at risk of this condition. Now, you touched on hereditary factors. Are there any sort of dietary or lifestyle factors that make you more at risk?
Yes. A recognized reason for hemorrhoids is straining and constipation. So that means if you have a bad diet and you are overweight, then you're more likely to get hemorrhoids because you'd be straining.
Sure.
Of course, also, it helps if you are a little bit more active, because it's more hemorrhoids are more common in sedentary people.
That's interesting. Is that literally because you're sitting down all day?
Yes. And you're likely to be overweight as well.
Sure.
So what we would suggest is that you can't do anything about the hereditary factors, but of course, balanced good diet with lots of fiber and roughage and drinking plenty, taking regular exercises would help. And similarly, also trying to avoid straining at stool. That means not sitting there for hours on end, but not deferring opening your bowels, going regularly and having a good pattern. And trying to avoid straining as much as possible.
Sure. Okay. I was slightly surprised to find out there's no clear estimate of the proportion of people in the UK who have hemorrhoids. Now, the official figures are that it's anywhere between 4% and 25%, which is quite vague. Why can't we be more certain about the incidence?
The trouble is that no one, it's underreported. Not many people will, if they have only minor symptoms, would consult a doctor. Also, their symptoms does vary from time to time, so that is that you can have bleeding for a little while, which stops and people ignore it. And then it gets better because they have gone to a better diet and it might not be a problem to them. During pregnancy, of course, after pregnancy, it improves. So we sometimes don't get a true incidence. And certainly, sometimes when we think that the problem is from hemorrhoids, it might not be from hemorrhoids at all.
Okay.
And it could be from some other reason, which if they're not investigated, then we would never know. And some of these patients aren't investigated until, their symptoms get worse and worse. And then they present with something else as well. And on investigations, it proves that, well, although they did have bleeding, hemorrhoids was not the cause. Common causes, like other causes of bleeding, which we should consider, bowel cancer being one of them, because then you would be straining.
Yeah.
Also, in elderly people who have difficulty passing urine, and they strain because they have got a big prostate. Now, they are at risk of developing hemorrhoids. Often in younger people, we find that they have polyps in their bowel, which can bleed from time to time.
Are they dangerous?
Well, polyps on their own are not dangerous, and especially if they're treated early. That means we take them out by examining the bowel endoscopically and removing them, then they're not at all dangerous. But of course, if nothing's done and they're left and they grow and gradually grow over a period, which we think is between 2 and 5 years, then they can transform into something which is sinister.
So there's a very important message here, isn't it, which is that the bleeding doesn't always mean something bad and something scary. It can be easily treated sometimes, but you've got to get over the embarrassment factor. You've got to go to the doctor.
You've got to go to the doctor, and you've got to give let the doctor decide as to whether it needs investigating more, and not make your own decision. The doctor is trained. He will ask you the relevant questions, which may not appear important to you, but that may mean a lot. And that would, and especially if you're over 5, any bleeding should not be ignored at all, any rectal bleeding.
Sure. You see, I was saying to you a minute ago off air that I'd always assumed that hemorrhoids was mostly an aesthetic thing, and didn't really realise the amount of pain and discomfort and so on it can bring. But am I right in thinking that if you feel that you have a hemorrhoid, even though you don't have any symptoms of bleeding and pain, you should still go to see your GP?
Yes, I think you should still go and see your GP, for the simple reason that the GP needs to make certain what the diagnosis is. In the initial stages, they can be treated with simple methods, and that could keep your symptoms at bay. And certainly, it's better to have treatment at an early stage rather than letting them progress. Sometimes when they are really advanced, what also happens is that when they prolapse, they also obstruct the back passage. So it's it becomes difficult to open your bowels. And that in turn leads to more straining and making the problem worse. And certainly in the initial stages, if one treats them with simple dietary advice and various other means, then the symptoms may not be so worse.
Sure. So, I mean, again, it's just incredibly important that people need to get over that embarrassment factor. And you were saying to me off air a minute ago, in cases of bowel cancer, by the time they come to see you, they're so far advanced. I mean, obviously, we're concentrating on hemorrhoids tonight, but they're so far advanced that very often there's not a great deal you can do about it.
Yes, it's even these days, 1 in 4 patients present with advanced bowel cancer as an emergency, when by the time we have investigated them, the cancer has already spread to other organs of the body. And although we are able to treat them, but at times they are too advanced. And therefore, a curative treatment might not be possible. Whereas in the early stages, nowadays, if we can diagnose bowel cancer, we can treat it very effectively with a cure in more than sort of 6 out of 10 patients with long-term survival. So it is very important that one doesn't ignore symptoms of a change, slight change in bowel habit or bleeding occasionally. Certainly if it's bright red blood, it's less likely, because with bowel cancer there are other symptoms as well which one has to be aware of, like there is a change in bowel habit, there is a feeling that there's something in the bottom which sort of prevents full evacuation of the bowel, maybe a little bit of pain in the lower abdomen, all those symptoms, maybe appetite not being as it had been in the past. So all those symptoms are does add.
Why is that, the appetite thing? What's that caused by?
Yes, what happens is with any cancer, you have some generalized symptoms. What it is the body's reaction to it, the fact that part of the bowel may not be working as well. And that means the body then reacts by not sort of having a very good appetite so that it doesn't distend the bowel, and also the generalized sort of ill effects of the disease affects your appetite.
Okay. All right. So just to get back onto hemorrhoids again, just to sort of to sum up again, your typical symptoms that might indicate hemorrhoids, you've got discomfort, bleeding, obviously the aesthetic, being able to feel that there's something there. Anything else?
Occasionally itching around that area, a bit of sort of dampness and discharge from that area. And typically what happens in hemorrhoids is that you see fresh blood, say, for a week or so, or 10 days, and then it goes away.
Mm-hmm.
And you are well for about 2-3 weeks, mm-hmm. and then again it comes back. That's typical symptoms that we tend to see.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the big message is just go to your doctor. They've seen it all before, right?
Yes.
No matter how unpleasant you think it is, they've seen worse, believe me. So obviously you should consult your doctor straight away if you have any of these symptoms. I'm just thinking, I'm sort of putting myself in the mind of somebody like this, it must be so embarrassing and worrying. I'm sure that must affect sort of how you then start eating, and I'm sure when you become more tense, it's probably more difficult to go to the loo anyway, isn't it?
Yes, yes, it is. It is much, much difficult if you're tense. And certainly, you know, if you're not eating, it will affect other, you know, your mood, how you are, and if you're in constant pain, how you react with people. So all those are important. Mm. And certainly, they shouldn't be ignored, because we do have a very effective treatment.
Is there, you can buy over-the-counter remedies for hemorrhoids, can't you?
Yes, you can.
Is there, I'm going off on a tangent here, but is there a tendency for people to just try to self-diagnose and self-treat?
Yes, and some of the remedies that we do have and could be bought over-the-counter, they are effective in the early stages. What they have is a soothing effect.
Right.
They also have something which shrinks and makes the blood vessels a little bit less prominent. And of course, it sort of lubricates the area as well. So they do work,
but
only in the early stages.
Right. Yeah, you should still see your GP, absolutely. Okay, you're listening to Body Talk in association with Spire Hartswood Hospital here on Phoenix FM. My name's Jules Patazzi. We'll be back after some more music.
Body Talk, sponsored by Spire Hartswood Hospital in Brentwood, your local private hospital.
You're listening to Body Talk in association with Spire Hartswood Hospital here on Phoenix FM with me, Jules Patazzi. We're talking hemorrhoids tonight. We have Mr. Mrinal Sahare with us tonight. Mrinal, we were just talking at length, really, trying to persuade people, if anybody's listening who is worried about this, to please, please, please go and see their GP and get over the kind of embarrassment factor. Would you like to say something about what are the risks associated with not seeing medical advice? I mean, we've sort of touched on this a little bit already.
Yes. If the diagnosis is hemorrhoids, then it's more of a nuisance rather than anything sinister.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, bright red rectal bleeding in most instances is due to hemorrhoids, but certainly not always. And if people who have had bleeding, which is recent, with some change in bowel habit, if they don't see their GP, then they'd miss that golden opportunity when we could have diagnosed something sinister early and treated them very effectively. The other side of the coin is, if it is hemorrhoids, of course, when they're early, they're simple advice and treatments that one could one could give them. And that probably would make their lives much more comfortable and give them peace of mind, knowing that there isn't anything else sinister.
Yeah. Okay, well, you've mentioned treatments. Let's move on to treatments now. What would be the first line tests or treatment that you'd be offering?
Okay. Now, hemorrhoids are broadly classified into sort of 4 different stages. To start with, when they're very early, we call them stage 1. They tend to bleed. They sometimes tend to itch. bit of dampness, but on the whole, they do not cause much pain as such, but sometimes can be uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's the second stage where they're a bit more pronounced, where sometimes while opening your bowels, you'll feel that something's come down or there is a feeling that something's obstructing it. But again, and they bleed from time to time. But they sort of spontaneously reduce. That means you don't have to push them back.
Mm-hmm.
So that's stage two. And then it's stage three, when they're much more advanced and they in fact affect sort of quite a wide area of the anal canal, and they come down when opening your bowels and you literally have to push them back.
Mm-hmm.
And of course then the final stage, when they're out all the time, when it's very uncomfortable, and you know, it's difficult to sit down because of the excess skin in that area. When you pass a motion, and especially if you're constipated, you can get a little cut, which is called an anal fissure, which produces a lot of pain. And some patients say it's like passing glass. So that's obviously a very advanced stage.
Sure. How big can they get?
Oh, they can get like a bunch of grapes. And sometimes, you know, suddenly when they bleed into the tissues, you can get a little sort of a ball, like a golf ball.
Oh, my word.
And it is
seriously
painful.
Big?
Yes, seriously.
Good grief.
So treatment-wise, in the early stages, for stage one, simple measures, dietary measures, and, you know, having a healthy lifestyle, eating plenty of fruits and vegetables, making certain that you drink plenty, that you have a little bit of bran in the morning. All that helps. And some of the proprietary creams that you mentioned earlier, bought over the counter, they also are quite helpful. When they're a little bit more advanced, then we treat them. And at that stage, of course, you have got to be seen by your GP or at the local hospital. And we can then treat them either by injecting a substance, which is phenol in almond oil. What we do is, it's a quite a sort of a thick liquid. And what it does, we inject it just around the hemorrhoids. But it has to be injected sort of slightly higher up, because the lower 1.5 centimeter of the back passage is extremely sensitive, and there are lots and lots of nerves.
Right.
So and certainly one can't inject in that area. But we can inject slightly higher up, and that area has got relatively few pain fibers. So the whole procedure could be done as an outpatient. And when we inject around the hemorrhoids, what it does is two things. First of all, it produces a lot of inflammation in that area, and it shrinks the blood vessels a little bit.
Right.
And it also makes the lining of the inner lining of the bowel a little bit thicker, so that they don't bleed as easily, and they become fixed a little bit, so that they don't come down as easily.
Right.
Another treatment is to put rubber bands around the base of the hemorrhoids. And
I'd heard people talking about that. I didn't know it really happened.
Yes, it's called banding. Now, what we tend to do there is suck the prominent sort of blood vessels, again, above what we call that a line, which is called the dentate line. That's the where the below that are the pain fibers, and above that there isn't. And we put a rubber band around the base of the hemorrhoids with the idea that over the next 7 to 10 days, the area will sort of shrink, and the, you know, the band will fall off, taking with it the hemorrhoids. Sometimes at that point, there can be quite troublesome bleeding. So some clinicians avoid banding.
That does sound painful. Is it painful?
It's only painful if you are too low. That means if you don't follow the correct procedure.
Right.
But if you do follow the correct procedure and it's above where the pain fibers are, then it should not be painful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. After, but then some hemorrhoids are too advanced to be treated with either banding or with injections.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're at that stage, then certainly one has to consider an operation.
Right.
And for centuries, we used to do an operation which is called the Milligan-Morgan procedure, where we simply cut out the hemorrhoids. And in fact, we used to cut out the hemorrhoids where the pain fibers are. That means where the just around the back passage where they're most prominent.
Mm-hmm.
And all clinicians, and for that matter patients, avoided having an operation because the procedure was very painful.
Mm.
And also it did, if not correctly performed, there was a high incidence of complications, like
right.
the back passage becoming narrow once it is healed,
mm-hmm.
and thereby affecting opening your bowels, or the continence mechanism being affected because of the procedure not being performed correctly. So there are now newer techniques mm-hmm. that we use. We sometimes, in the early stages, we can accurately identify the blood vessels and put a stitch around it to reduce blood flow.
Okay.
And that is called a HALO procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, we also do a newer procedure called a stapled hemorrhoidopexy, or procedure for prolapse and hemorrhoids.
That's the PPH procedure I have heard about, yes.
Yes, that is the PPH procedure, and yes, we do perform it at the Spire Hartswood.
Mm-hmm.
And what it involves is operating in an area which is above the pain, where the pain fibers are, that is above the dentate line.
Mm-hmm.
And because it is relatively painless as compared to the other procedure, it can be done as a day case procedure.
Wow, that's really good.
Yeah. And of course, that means that there's a lot less stressful
course,
for the patient.
Yes, yeah.
It's less straining on NHS resources. In that procedure, what we tend to do is remove an area of the rectal wall,
mm-hmm.
not full thickness, but part of it, sort of just above where the pain fibers are. And in that, doing that, what we do is we lift up all the sort of area of hemorrhoids which has fallen down. We lift it up. And also, some of the blood vessels are disconnected. And once when the body heals by fibrosis, the hemorrhoids shrink. It is like a lift.
I was going to say, it sounds like a facelift for the bottom.
Yes, it is like a facelift for the bottom. And we use a special sort of staple gun for it. It is called the Longo procedure,
mm-hmm.
First designed by an Italian surgeon who now works in Vienna. And in fact, I've worked with him and I've assisted him in these procedures.
Very good. We have a famous person in the studio tonight then.
So we tend to use that and get a complete sort of 2-centimeter rectal wall as a donut.
I think it's astonishing that something that sort of detailed and technical can be done as a daycare operation. I mean, I keep on saying to you that the kind of people that you must see, that they must be so, you know, embarrassed and emotional. And it's a difficult thing to have to, you know, go and be treated. It must make you feel very, I don't know, it can't make you feel great having something like this. So the fact that you can be in and out of hospital that quickly in the course of a day, I think for this particular sort of specialism, is fantastic, isn't it?
Yes, and also the fact that after care is not as it used to be.
Right.
Simple analgesics will control the discomfort. And certainly you're back to work much more quickly.
Mm-hmm. How quickly could you go back to work after something like that?
Well, it depends from patient to patient.
Sure.
But the earliest was on a nursing colleague of mine who had the procedure and was back for a whole day meeting 36 hours late.
Wow. When you know something like that, you just think, I'm sure, you know, why haven't I done something about this before? And I hope that's inspiring people who are listening, who are worried about this, to think, gosh, you know what? It's not that big a deal. I could go and sort it out.
Yeah, certainly, it's not as big a deal as it used to be.
Of course, yeah.
And the complications that can happen from these operations are now not at all as significant as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, you can get a bit of bleeding. Sometimes you have a feeling for a few days that you want to open your bowels a bit more regularly. Occasionally, there could be problems just with passing urine for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, these are all minor things.
Sure, sure. Excellent. Rinal, thank you very much. Let's just have a little bit more music.
Body Talk, sponsored by Spire Hartswood Hospital in Brentwood, your local private hospital.
This is indeed Body Talk in association with Spire Hearts Hospital. Put my teeth back in here on Phoenix FM. Mr. Sahare, we're talking about hemorrhoids. We have been talking about hemorrhoids for the past hour. It's absolutely fascinating, actually. We've been talking about this PPH procedure that's available at Spire, and you just told me it's not actually available in very many places, is it?
Yes, it's a procedure that's not. It's only been going on for the last sort of 8 or 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And not all centres in the UK perform the procedure, neither do all colorectal surgeons.
Mm-hmm.
However, a few years ago, this procedure was looked at by NICE due to clinical excellence,
mm-hmm.
and they certainly have recommended the procedure and have said that the advantages and the long and the results probably are better compared to the previous operation.
Well, that's good.
And certainly it's less painful. So it is available at the Spire.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, but GPs can make referrals to a named person because in some NHS hospitals it will be available.
Right.
And of course, it is available at the Spire.
Sure,
Hartsford.
Sure. Is surgery a last resort, or do you see this as a sort of practical, permanent solution to the problem?
It depends on your symptoms. And I think that for a young person who has got significant symptoms, surgery should be considered because it's not as painful as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to that one day in hospital, the advantages that makes to your subsequent life,
sure,
is you can't compare.
Sure.
And certainly your quality of life is much, much better.
No, absolutely. It must be so difficult to live with. It's such an easy thing to do, like you say.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, and sort of finally, we've got to wrap things up because Graham's on at 8. We have to wrap things up now. So finally, to sort of end on a more positive note, are there any preventative tips you'd recommend to reduce the risk of developing hemorrhoids in the first place?
Yes, as I had said before, that a healthy lifestyle, making certain that you have got your fiber day in your diet,
mm-hmm.
that you eat enough fibers, that you drink plenty, that you lead a balanced life, and that you try and avoid straining. Other than that, I don't think you can do much. But certainly it would be a good idea to get advice at an early stage.
Sure.
And of course, even if you need surgery, it's not a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the advantages and your quality of life thereafter is much better.
Sure. No, absolutely. Mrinal Saharay, thank you very, very much for coming in tonight and talking to us all about this. I do hope if anybody's listening that is suffering from this problem, this will have inspired them to go and do something about it. Like we said before, always go and see your GP because they've seen it all before, haven't they?
Yes, yes. And, you know, I can reassure everyone that going and seeing your GP and a consultant is not as daunting as one would think it to be.
Yeah, you're all quite nice, really, aren't you?
Yeah, and it's over in minutes.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming in to see us tonight on Body Talk. And I will see you all next week. Toodle-pip.
Body Talk, sponsored by Spire Hartswood Hospital in Brentwood, your local private hospital.